Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'd like to thank you for holding on. And like we said in our show notes, the bitter ender, the Yankee killing, sword destroying bitter ender, he comes in once a month. He puts his sword down, just temporarily now, temporarily, so he can put his professor hat on. And that is what he's getting ready to do right now. He's going to take us back to school on the Confederate History Hour. And I also put in the show notes, God bless Gene, because, you know, he instills the truth, truth history, and the truth about white people, their bloodline, their genealogy, and all white culture. He dispels all the lies that have been told about us, especially in the South, ever since Appomattox. But anyway, go back to your, go ahead, Bitterender, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing fine, Eddie, fine. Enjoy always being with you and coming up with some different information for our listeners that I'm sure they didn't get on CNN or the View, and try to dispel a lot of this propaganda garbage. And we've used this quote before, but it's so true. Winston Churchill said, "The first casualty in war is the truth," and he ought to know because he lied us into World War II. But at least he got that part of it right. But it is. The propaganda that you demonize your opponent with, like, and of course, Monica Schaefer knows what this is like about all the lies and misinformation about the German people and what went on there. And then goes on today that you can't speak up for the Germans during World War II, or you're automatically the enemy of the world right there. So it's pretty much the same thing in the South now in this country. We were talking last week and winding up right at the last, and I would like to pick up there and kind of continue, and then we're going to pick up some modern attacks on us. The war still goes on today. But we were talking about Reconstruction, and I call it Redestruction, because that's what happened to the South when the armies surrendered. Lee at Appomattox and the Army of Tennessee at Durham Station in North Carolina, and then Richard Taylor surrendered the whole department where Bedford Forrest was in May of 1865. And then, of course, then they finally got the word out across the Mississippi in the Trans-Mississippi Department that the war had pretty much ended. And a lot of the soldiers out there just refused to surrender. You know, Joe Shelby was in Texas, and they crossed the Rio Grande River there at Eagle Pass, Texas. And that's why they have a Shelby Park there in Texas. And he supposedly had his flag, Confederate flag, wrapped up in rocks, and they buried it in the river so nobody would get the flag. And when he got over to the Mexico side, he threw his sword back into the river. He wasn't going to surrender his sword. Eventually, they did come back to the States, though. But so that was the end of it. There was no military left to protect the Southern civilians, and the country was overrun by the enemy. And not only the enemy soldiers, but the enemy civilians, and these carpetbaggers, as they were called, because all their possessions were just in a carpet bag, like a kind of like a traveling bag that we have today. But these carpetbaggers descended on the South because now they were really brave. The Southern armies had been defeated, and they didn't have to worry about Bedford Forrest coming after them, or Thomas Jackson, or Joe Shelby, or any of these people, John Mosby, that were going to take care of a revenge for somebody that was committing war crimes against the South. They had free reign. And of course, the government in Washington, there was no Confederate government left. So now we were back under the boot heel of the Washington government, and they wanted revenge. Thaddeus Stevens and a lot of the political officials in the North, and some of Lincoln's cabinet members, they wanted to hang all the Confederate generals and government officials, as they had tried to overthrow the glorious Union, and so they wanted revenge against them. The Secretary of War, Secretary of State, and Thaddeus Stevens was one of the crazy congressmen or senators from up north, Benjamin Wade. So that was what we were looking at. And of course, they kept Jefferson Davis in prison and in a dungeon at Fort Monroe, hoping he was going to die there. And then they were going to put him on trial. And of course, it'd be one of those sham Soviet trials. The verdict was decided before they ever had the trial. And the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Justice Taney, said, you know, you really don't want to put him on trial because you cannot prove that secession was illegal. So what may come out in this trial is we fought a war for 4 years, cost the lives of nearly 700,000 Americans, and it was legal what they were doing. So they finally had to release him. But for the rest of the South, it was pretty bad. The Yankee government passed what they call the Franchise Act, which barred all Confederates, soldiers, political leaders, and even anybody that aided the Confederacy. Even if you weren't in the Confederate Army, you couldn't vote. And so if you had a grudge with your neighbor down the road there, Eddie, all your neighbor had to do is say, yeah, well, I've seen that old Eddie Miller. He sold a bag of corn to Bedford Forest Cavalry when they come through here. Then you aided the Confederacy, and you were taken off the voting rolls. And so you say, well, who cares? We didn't have anybody but a bunch of rats down here to vote for anyway. No, here's what the problem was. That meant you couldn't vote for sheriff. You couldn't vote for judges. You couldn't vote for tax assessor. And that's where the big money people from up north came down here and stole so much of the southern land, because the tax assessor could say your little 12 by 20 foot cabin was valued at $3 million and your taxes are an astronomical amount. There's no way you could pay it. Well, he forfeits his land. He couldn't pay his taxes on it. So that's how so much of the southern land was stolen by these big industrialists or big, you know, rich people from the north, the Vanderbilts and the Carnegies and the all of these people would come down here and buy up southern land for just pennies on the dollar. And so people were losing their homes, they were losing their farms. And then besides that, so like I said, you couldn't decide who could vote. So they would take these illiterate blacks that had been living on plantations, couldn't read, couldn't write, and they would make voters. The Republican Party would make voters out of them. And back then, what you have to remember is the Republican Party was the nutcase party. They would be like the Democrats are today. They would have AOC and Chuck U. Schumer and crazy Joe Biden or senile Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris and all of them. They would have been in the Republican Party back then. And so you had a very corrupt administration all across the South, and they would take these blacks around to vote. And Southern whites couldn't vote, so they'd drag these blacks in and say, okay, you make your mark on this side of the paper right here. Yep, right here on this side of the paper. That's who you vote for. And they had, you know, you've heard that expression, sweating like a darky on election day. Well, although it's a little something else from side there, but that's the point of it. Yes. And then they would drag them around from the third precinct over to the fifth precinct and then the seventh precinct and the 12th precinct. They were the only ones that could vote. So, yeah, they were sweating because they were wearing them out, taking them from one precinct to another to vote or make their mark. And that's why there was so much resentment against the blacks in the South. And that's exactly what the Republicans wanted. They wanted to drive a wedge between the whites and the blacks in the South so the blacks would never vote for the same party or the same candidate that their neighbors were voting for, because the Southerners that could vote eventually would vote for a conservative Democrat. And so the blacks in the 1860s, 70s, 80s, all up through there, the ones that could vote, would vote for the Republican Party, because that was, you know, gave them 40 acres and a mule and all this kind of stuff like that. And we're going to vote, you know, like they showed in Gone with the Wind, where they were telling those blacks on the street there in Atlanta, you're going to vote, and you're going to vote like your friends vote, you know, and that's exactly what they were doing. So that was the Franchise Act and the results of that. And then having black troops down here, USCTs, United States Colored Troops, and the Freedmen's Bureau, and attacking the whites. And they wanted this wedge driven between the whites and the blacks, and it worked. Not only did they pass the Franchise Act, but they abolished all the states in the South. that had been in the Confederacy and set up military districts. So in Virginia, you were not a citizen of the state of Virginia. You were just living in Military District 1. And then I think North and South Carolina were 2, and Georgia and Florida were 3, and so forth. So there weren't any states after the war. They were just military districts run by military officers and the military army down here. And the reason the Republican government and the Reconstruction was hated so much in the South, there were a lot of places in the South that really weren't affected by the war. And we'll get into the reason why that happened and our little geography lesson here after we get back from the break.
Yeah, I got to ask you about the Vanderbilt before we come back, Gene. Be right back, folks.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and, by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
In the morning. Smells like victory.
Some folks are born made
to win the play. He's got a couple of points here. I'll tell you what me and Gene talked about during the break, but also like to go back. And I've done this a bunch of times, but I think it needs repeating. Gene mentioned the bitter ender said that we had the right to secede from that and start a new government. And it says right here in the Declaration of Independence, I'll just skip down. I won't even read most of it. I'm just going to say that it says that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, that's the rights, the rights that we're enumerated with, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them that seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. That's true. We had the right to succeed. Gene is 1,000% right. Another thing I pointed out to Gene, I didn't know. Gene, tell them about some of these carpet baggers we talked about. And I think we all should repeat. I mean, go back to visit the sharecroppers. And my family on my mother's side, they were sharecroppers. You don't know hard work people. You really don't. You have no clue. And they live like dogs. My grandfather lived in a house with holes in the floor and stuff. They were dirt poor.
Well, that's what they wanted. They wanted the South to be impoverished, and they wanted the South to be an agricultural colony of the Northeast, where they just robbed the production of crops in the South. And that's where a lot of these northern people got these huge timber rights to all of these, like Weyerhaeuser and all of these timber companies. Got the rights to just acres and acres and acres of forest in the South. And they'd come in and just clear-cut everything. So then when it rained, you're washing your topsoil off the sides of hills and everything and down into the creeks, and the land was just pretty much destroyed. But they didn't care. They cut it for lumber and hauled it off up to the north and sold it, and they were making big money. They didn't care what the South, the landscape of the South looked like. They were our enemies. They tried to destroy the Greek union of the country. And so a lot of the bad things that happened to the South, and the South was impoverished for over 100 years after the war. It took nearly 100 years to get back on its feet economically. And it took over 100 years to have a Republican elected in the South. The Republican Party was so hated because of what they've done. And so, and the blacks were too, because they were collaborators with the enemy. And you say, well, the Southerners were just terrible people, you know. They didn't like the blacks. No, it wasn't because they were black. It was because what they did. They collaborated with the enemy in our country, in the South. And it's no different than the French. When the Allies started, came out of Normandy and started sweeping across France and into Paris, and the German army was pulling back and heading back toward the German frontier. Well, the French then turned against the French in Paris. The males that had sided with the Germans were either beaten or killed. And then the women, you've seen those pictures of the women that were girlfriends with the German soldiers, they were beaten and had their heads shaved. So the Southerners, once they could get their vote back and get their country back, they weren't any different than the people in France. Or give you another example. They wouldn't vote Republican, like I said, for 100 years, but that was no different than the countries in Eastern Europe that were overrun by the Soviet, the Red Army, or given the land by Roosevelt and Churchill gave Eastern Europe over to the Russians. And yes, the Red Army came in and took over Yugoslavia and Albania and Romania and Hungary and Czechoslovakia and Poland and East Germany. All of those people had to live under communism. So once the Soviet Union collapsed in 1989, and the Soviet, the Reds and the Soviets were thrown out of Eastern Europe, who in their right mind, in a fair election, would vote for a candidate from the USSR? They were the people that had occupied Hungary. They were the people that had occupied Poland. They were the people that starved us to death, that killed our people, that, you know, raped our women. Why would you vote for a Soviet candidate if you had a fair election in Hungary or Czechoslovakia or Romania or any of those countries that had lived under the Soviet rule? Then why would you be considered a bad person if you didn't want to vote for a Soviet candidate in an election, and you had a free election, you could vote for somebody else? So they don't make that parallel, of course, from the people in Eastern Europe getting rid of the Soviets and Southerners getting rid of the occupation army down here. So, Eddie, in Tennessee, this is up to probably the 1970s before we had a Republican governor. Well, I think they had one or two, but most of the governors up until about 1970 and Winfield Dunn were Democrats. And I can remember, yes, this as a little boy. The only election that counted in Tennessee was the Democratic primary. And they had a general election, but they ran Joe Nobody. The Republicans ran no Joe Body in the general election. They weren't going to be elected. And a lot of times we would have one Republican in the House of Representatives, but that was usually from East Tennessee. And the other eight from Middle and West Tennessee were always Democrat. And so you just, the Republican Party was still hated up until in the 1970s because of what they had done during Reconstruction. So that's a little historical background there of what had happened to the South after the war and why politics were set up the way they were in the South. And they talked about the solid South, that it always votes Democrat and they vote for these terrible racists and whatever. Yeah, of course they did. And once they got the vote back, they made sure that the blacks were never going to get in a position where they would have their boot heel on our neck and grind our face into the dirt by illiterate people that had no business holding power. And a lot of these elections that came along in several of the southern states in the 1960s, 1970s, and they always bragged about, well, this is the first time that a black has been elected to the legislature or to Congress from South Carolina since Reconstruction, or Georgia from since Reconstruction, or Alabama since Reconstruction. Well, hell yeah. I mean, they were the enemy. You know, why would you vote for somebody that was grinding your face into the dirt and making life miserable for you, stole your parents' land and everything like that? So anyway, that's why the politics were set the way they were in the South. And now the South is a solid South again, but it's solid Republican, because the Republican Party now is a conservative party, and the Democratic Party has got all the wacko crazy people in it right there. So let me address a couple of things that we always have thrown against us. They always say, well, because we have Confederate Memorial Day and we have memorial services at Confederate cemeteries, and we dedicate dedicated Confederate monuments that were built across the South. And I've heard people say, well, the reason they put up this monument was because of segregation. And it looked like the blacks in the early 1900s were going to be getting voting rights and things like that. So they put up these monuments to continue segregation and all these anti-black feelings in the South. No, dummy. The South didn't have the money to put up monuments until the late 1800s or the early 1900s. Because the United Daughters of the Confederacy were the ones that went around and collected money to get these monuments put up. And if you look at most of the dates on these, they were late 1800s, 1890s, early 1900s, because there was nobody in the South could write a big check for this to get these monuments made. They had to go around and collect nickels and dimes from people to try to get enough money for $20,000 or $30,000 to get some of these monuments cut. Yes.
I was going to ask you a question. Since General Nathan Bedford Forrest, so dear to your heart and my heart, where he was a Tennessean like we are, and his his burial site used to be here in Memphis. The worst sunburn I ever had in my life was in a wading pool when I was in second or third grade in the shadow of the General Nathan Bedford Forrest. That leads to a question, and I know you covered this once before, but that the when the people collected the money to that great monument, one of the most beautiful statues anywhere in the world, the South was still destitute and broke, but they did. The people in the South came over that money. Do you remember how much it was, Gene? What are the details of the people?
$30,000 for that equestrian statue. 1909 was when they moved General Forrest and his wife from the cemetery there in Memphis out to the outskirts of Memphis, it's surrounded by the city now where Forest Park is, but it was on the outskirts of Memphis. Beautiful land there, and they were reburied at what was then dedicated as Forest Park, and then about 2 years later, they got the equestrian statue and had the pedestal made and put it up over the graves there, right next to the graves, right there in Forest Park. So, yeah, it was in the 1900s before the South had enough money to start building all these monuments. And they say, well, that was for segregation. It was anti-black. Go read what it says on there. All of them. It dedicated to the young men that defended our country, or the in memory of the boys that never came home, or things like that. It was a Confederate soldier. They weren't going to put up a monument. They didn't want to have anything to do with the blacks that sided with the enemy. And you go to any of these town squares across the South, and a lot of them at the town square, they have a monument with a Confederate soldier on top of it. And the reason they put them up, most of them are dedicated to the boys that never came home, because they were buried in Pennsylvania or all the way out to Arizona, and most of them never came back to Tennessee or Alabama or Georgia, wherever. They buried them wherever they died in the battle.
Yes. You know, I'd like to talk about Arizona when we come back, and I bet you'll remember it. Dear people, you got a long break now. If you need to get some coffee or something, you got about 4 minutes, but don't be late, brothers. Be right back, brothers and sisters.
How would you like to help this program reach more people and earn silver at the same time? Call or text 801-669-2211 for complete details.
News this hour from Town Hall, I'm Mary Rose. President Trump's son Eric says it's hard to fathom the impact Charlie Kirk has made on American politics.
Built one of the greatest youth political movements in history, probably the greatest youth political movements. And, you know, then somebody's, you know, in dressed in all black sits on top of a roof with a rifle, you know, while calling him a fascist for exercising free speech and, yes. You know, and kills a dear friend of ours. And it's absolutely heartbreaking.
A memorial is set for Kirk tomorrow in Arizona. Left-wing violence is on many minds in the aftermath of the Kirk assassination. Correspondent Julie Walker reports now that Luigi Mangione's lawyers want the death penalty off the table in the murder of the United Healthcare CEO.
Less than a week after Luigi Mangione was in court in New York for his state case in the killing of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson, his lawyers are urging a judge to bar federal prosecutors from seeking the death penalty, arguing authorities prejudiced his case by turning his arrest and perp walk into what they call a Marvel movie spectacle, and by publicly declaring their desire to see him executed. Meanwhile, in the state case, the judge took the terrorism charge off the table, citing it was being misused. Mangione still faces state charges of murder, too, which carry a 15-year-to-life sentence. Julie Walker, New York.
Plenty of fireworks yesterday as the Senate prepared to vote on a pair of contrasting continuing resolution bills to avoid a government shutdown. Chuck Schumer urged his colleagues not
to stand with Donald Trump and keep the same lousy status quo and cause the Trump health care shutdown.
But Republican John Thune called the House bill clean.
Laden down with partisan policies and appeals to the Democrats' leftist base.
More on these stories at townhall.com.
We all know the importance of good daily habits, whether it's getting outside, getting your steps in, stretching those limbs, or eating right. Doing it on the regular is key. That's why if you're dealing with everyday aches and pains, it's time to bring Relief Factor into your life. Head over to ReliefFactor.com or give them a call at 800-4-RELIEF and get their three-week quick start for just $19.95. Relief Factor is the daily supplement that fights pain naturally. Developed by a team of doctors, it uses a special formula of four natural ingredients. Relief Factor doesn't just mask the pain, it helps reduce or eliminate it. In fact, the longer you take Relief Factor, the more effective it is to get your days going without any pain. So if we get you out of pain by taking their three-week quick start, it's only $19.95, less than a dollar a day. Simply call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, wherever you're having pain, neck, shoulders, hips, knees. Don't let it keep you from living the life you want to live. Make Relief Factor part of your daily routine. Go to ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800-4-RELIEF.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Get ready to be part of something incredible. We're breaking barriers and delivering the powerful stories that mainstream media won't touch. Your support is what fuels our mission to revolutionize journalism and bring you the truth. Join our passionate community of changemakers by donating at libertynewsradio.com today. Together, we're creating the future of news.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're having a ball. I wish y'all could be in tune to some of the conversations we have during the break, but I was just telling the bitter ender that I can remember here when Memphis was called the hardwood capital of the world, and those Yankees, I measure Anderson Tully, who had Anderson Tully Timber Company, trees that would do make a California redwood proud, I'm telling you, every kind, hickory, wild cherry, walnut, every kind you can think of, a persimmon, just millions of dollars worth of hardwood. Anyway, so that's just an aside right there of what the Yankees came down and stole. And I was talking about my grandparents being sharecroppers again. But anyway, I'm going to shut up and go right back to the bitter ender. I was reminiscing what the bitter ender says takes me back. I've experienced a lot of stuff in the South that Gene talks about. But go back to you, bitter ender.
Well, yeah, we were just wrapping up our segment here, historical segment, on the results of the war in the South and during redestruction of what it did to the South. And like we said, some of the parts of the South had never had any battles or anything, so way off in the corner of some state or up, you know, toward the mountains or something. And, you know, if you look at a map of where all the battles were fought during the war, they were fought along rivers of the railroad. So you look at Tennessee, Fort Henry on the Tennessee River, Fort Donelson on the Cumberland River, Island Number 10 up on the Mississippi, the battles around Memphis there, and then down at Vicksburg, Mississippi on the river, on the Mississippi and Port Hudson. And then you look at the railroad lines between Nashville and Atlanta, and you had battles at Murfreesboro and around Chattanooga and Chickamauga, and Resaca, Georgia, and Allatoona, and Kennesaw Mountain, and all that. That's right up and down the Western Atlantic Railroad. So then you go over in the corner of states like Georgia or Alabama, they didn't know the war was going on unless you had a family member that was gone in the Confederate Army somewhere, which most of them did. But as far as actually having the federal troops there, they weren't there during the war. There's no point. Why would you send an army over into the corner of Alabama and there's nobody up there except a few farmers, and now you got to supply that army? But once the war was over and there weren't any Confederate armies left to defend the people, then every county and every state in the South was pretty much invaded, if not by the federal soldiers, then certainly by the carpetbaggers that came down here and were just like blood-sucking leeches to take everything they could get. So anyway, we've talked about that and the stolen land and so forth. So where does that bring us up to modern times? Well, we have people that still throw this back in our face that, why are you still fighting the war? When we talk about a Confederate memorial service or flying our flag or monuments that we want to preserve and keep them from being torn down, why are you still fighting the war, you guys? Well, we do that. We're still fighting because you're still invading us, and you're still had declared war on us. You're attacking us. You want to move in here and get away from Michigan or California or Ohio or wherever and come down where the weather's better and there are lower taxes, and then you get on the school board or you get on the historical commission, and you want to get rid of all our Confederate history. That's happened in Franklin, Tennessee. The Battle of Franklin there on November 30th, 1864 was a horrible bloodbath for the Confederate Army when they attacked earthworks, federal earthworks around the south side of Franklin, and the Confederates were coming up from out of Alabama and trying to destroy Schofield's Corps before they could reach the main Yankee Army in Nashville that had been occupied since February of 1862. And John Bell Hood, the Confederate commander, ignored the advice of his officers and launched this frontal attack across 2 miles of open ground. And so then after the war and later on, after the family sold their land, they made a Tennessee State Historical Site out of the Carter House. And their son, Todd Carter, was in the Confederate Army, was in that assault, and he was shot through the head and laid out on the battlefield that night. his sisters went out and found him and brought his body into the house there, the Carter house, and he died in his own bedroom the next day. So that became a state historic site. And then another one was over to the east of that was Carrington Plantation. It was owned by the McGavock family. And that plantation house, big two-story brick plantation, was used as a hospital. And the last time I went in there for a tour, there were bloodstains all up and down the steps and on the floors where they had operating rooms in the living room, the parlor, everything down there. And that's on the back porch of Carrington was where those five Confederate generals were laid out on the back porch that had been killed in the Battle of Franklin. One of them was Patrick Claiborne and some of the others that were laid out there. And then the McGavocks gave that plot of land for a Confederate cemetery right next to their family plot. And there are almost 1,500 Confederate soldiers that are buried in that Confederate cemetery at Carrington. And Carrie McGavock was such a brave lady that when the bodies were just buried in the trenches on the battlefield right after the battle just to cover them up. Well, a year or so later, the rain and dogs and hogs were digging up the bodies, and they had to do something with them. The Yankee bodies were dug up and taken to the National Cemetery up in Nashville. And, of course, nobody was going to do anything about the Confederates, but the McGavocks paid to have those bodies dug up and brought out to their farm and reburied, and they were buried in sections for Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, and identified. And she kept a record of who's buried on row number two, grave number one, row number three, grave number two. And there's a record of all those boys that are buried out there by states. They're only, out of the 1,500, they're only 250 in the unknown section of the McGavock Confederate Cemetery. Well, all that being said, the carpetbaggers, the modern carpetbaggers, have moved in, and the Battle of Franklin Preservation Association is run by a bunch of Yankees. And first thing they did, they fired Thomas Cartwright from the Carter House and got rid of him. And Thomas Cartwright has been all over the country speaking on the Battle of Franklin to these Civil War roundtables in Chicago, New York, all over, and been on the A&E and the History Channel. He is probably the greatest expert on the Battle of Franklin there is. I mean, you take one of his, now he's moved across the street to the Lotz House, and if you ever get to Franklin, sign up for a tour, a walking tour. It only goes about 100 yards down south, the Columbia Pike, and then across the road there and back. But he's got a big canvas map. He rolls out on the ground and says, okay, this is where this federal battery was, right over here by this light pole is where that was, and this and that. You get an inspirational tour from Thomas Cartwright. Wow. And you think you're on the Franklin battlefield right during the battle when he's giving that tour. So they got rid of him. And the same thing out at Carrington. And now the only thing they talk about at the Carter House and at Carrington is slavery and how terrible the Carter family was because they had slaves. And the McGavock family, oh, they were awful people. They had slaves and yada, 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 and on and on and on. So anyway, we've lost a lot of our Southern history to these carpetbaggers, modern-day carpetbaggers coming in here and taking over. And that's the reason they want to, we want to help out. We want to help, you know, all these historic sites. Well, they get in like a bunch of termites eating out the floor underneath you, and then pretty soon your floor collapses, and it's no longer a Confederate historic site.
Well, you have money, too. Those kind of people, they have the damn money usually.
Yeah, they do. And the older people that ran these places, they've died off, and now this modern bunch has come in. Same things happened in Nashville. We had two friends of mine, Wes Schaffner and Ross Massey, that started the Battle of Nashville Preservation. And Wes is a lawyer. He had the money to buy Shies Hill, which was a very prominent site in the Battle of Nashville on the second day of the 16th of December. That was getting ready. They were getting ready to develop that and put houses all up on there. He went in there and bought it and turned it over to this Battle of Nashville Preservation Group, and they eventually paid him back. But if it hadn't been for Wes, there'd be houses sitting on top of the Confederate trenches on top of Shies Hill. And one of the forts, Redoubt Number 1, right off of one of the main roads in Nashville, they saved that. But now all the Yankees have come in, the carpetbaggers have come in, and they've taken it over. And we used to have a flag park on I-65 coming up into Nashville with about 14 flagpoles, and they would fly 14 different Confederate flags out there, First National, Second National, Hardy Corps, Bonnie Blue Flag, and all this. So that was seen by millions of people going up and down I-65 headed to Florida or coming back up I-65 headed back up to Indianapolis or Chicago. Well, this Battle of Nashville bunch got in there, and there was a will that they couldn't figure out. They took it over, and our Confederate flags are gone. They stole them.
Happens over and over and over. It just really, really, really pisses me off. But anyway, we'll go right back. This is our last break. I cannot believe that we're almost out of time. Well, we got one more segment, people. Don't be late coming back to this lesson.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Experience the untamed spirit of the American West with Range Magazine. Each issue is a visual journey featuring award-winning photography and compelling stories that capture the heart of ranching and rural life. Stay informed on the challenges and triumphs of those who live and work on the land. Subscribe today and receive quarterly editions delivered to your doorstep, and join a community that cherishes the enduring legacy of the Western frontier. Visit rangemagazine.com to subscribe.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on. I wish y'all could tune in to the break sometimes. The Bitter Ender was telling us about the Lungeon Monkey. I don't know if he wants to talk about it or not. But, Gene, you want to tell them about the Lungeon Monkey, or what do you want? This is your hour, brother.
No, we were talking about how our country, the South, has been overrun by our enemies, and they have the money. And there's a guy that moved down from Minnesota, but he's dubbed himself an expert on the Battle of Franklin. Never majored in history and everything. He read a book by some Yankee regiment that somebody that was in a Yankee regiment here from Minnesota, and he packed up from Minneapolis or someplace, moved down here, and now he's the expert, and that's the person they go to for anything about Franklin. And of course, everything he wants to do is talk about slavery and how terrible the South was, et cetera, et cetera. So he got a bunch of money raised from the rich Yankees, of course, and they didn't have a monument to the black soldiers, the USCTs. So they put up this statue of this United States colored troop soldier on the courthouse square in Franklin, and it's kind of like it's running forward. We all call it the Lungeon Monkey because that's what it looks like, the way it's leaning forward there. And there weren't any USCT troops at the Battle of Franklin. They were in the Battle of Nashville. They got their rear end handed to them over at the railroad cut on Range Hill. And they got their rear end handed to them on the second day at Peach Orchard Hill, the second day Battle of Nashville on the 16th of December. But they weren't at Franklin. The only blacks that were at the Battle of Franklin were black soldiers that were in the Confederate Army. But, of course, they're not going to put up a monument to them. Oh, heavens no. But they put this, and they said, well, a lot of the blacks in the USCT units were recruited from Williamson County. Well, maybe they were, maybe they weren't, but they certainly, all the federal units that fought at the Battle of Franklin were solid white. There were no, well, they may have been some black Teamsters driving the wagons or something, but there weren't any combat troops in the federal army that was defending Franklin against the Confederates that were marching north trying to get to Nashville. So anyway, you know, the truth is the first casualty of war, as Churchill said. So bringing it up to modern times, what's happened? Well, they're still fighting against us. And I've had this thrown in my face. It said, you talk about all this Confederate stuff all the time, but we're all one country now. Well, not by choice. We voted Amen. To be a part of the Confederate States of America. We're in the United States of America at gunpoint. And yes. a lot of times on my letters, I put their return address. If they leave four lines, I put my name, street address, Nashville, Tennessee. And then the bottom line, if they leave four lines, I put Confederate States of America in parentheses, occupied. Leave it at that. And then here's another thing. I got a donation request from this commemorative Air Force, and they restore all the P-51 Mustangs and these B-17s, stuff like that. And they wanted money to honor our brave warriors in World War II for firebombing Dresden and killing as many German civilians as they can. But I wrote them a really nasty letter back about why I would never, never donate to these bunch of crooks and thugs and criminals, because this organization started out as the Confederate Air Force. And my dad even got some glasses from them, and they would have like a propeller and wings, and then across the top of this seal, they had Confederate Air Force. And the idea was there wasn't a Confederate Air Force, but this organization was preserving these old planes that, you know, to take care of the history of it. And going back to a time where there wasn't even an Air Force and calling it the Confederate Air Force, and did for years and years and years. And I'll tell you who sent them a lot of money was our friend Buddy Kirtland. And when they changed the name of it to the Commemorative Air Force, boy, he wrote them a letter that they were no longer getting any money from him. So, you know, we have to stand up to him. NASCAR. I had a friend of mine had a radio program, Dan Meredith, called Dixie Rising. And that's when I was driving the truck, the medical truck, and going to NASCAR races. So I would always come back on Monday and call in to Dan's show and tell him how many Confederate flags there were out in the infield at Atlanta or Rockingham or Talladega, and give him a Confederate flag count versus the Yankee flag, which is always about 10 or 12 to 1 number of flags. But, of course, NASCAR now, first of all, they tried to keep people from bringing the Confederate flag. And at Daytona one year, they would give them a Yankee flag if they would turn in their Confederate flag. And people coming into the racetrack at Daytona, they said, hell with you. We're not giving away our flag. That didn't Damn work right. too well. And so now they've banned the Confederate flag completely from NASCAR tracks. So I don't watch NASCAR.
No, they can kiss my ass.
If they were running up and down the street in front of my house, I'd close the windows and go in the backyard and cut firewood or rake leaves or something. So I could care less about NASCAR. Another group that has stabbed us in the back, Cracker Barrel. And everybody's, you know, it started in Lebanon, Tennessee, that little town right outside of Nashville. And all Southern cooking, and they had the restaurant and the gift shop. And in the gift shop, they used to have a lot of Confederate items in there. And then they had to get him a black vice president. And the first thing they did, they got rid of all the Confederate items in the gift shop. And then they've come out with a lot of junk that they hurt their business. And they had these gay pride rocking chairs out front. That didn't go over real well. And then the last thing that they did was they had a tirade that went on this rampage that they published this letter demanding that the governor of Tennessee, Slick Willie Lee, a liar and a double crosser, remove the forest bus from the state capitol. This bust was paid for by the Sons of Confederate Veterans. It was presented to the state capitol, to the state of Tennessee, and Slick Willie Lee, when he was campaigning for governor, he was asked by some members of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, will you protect our Confederate monuments, and will you keep the bust of Forrest in the state capitol? Oh, yes, I will. Yes, I will. I'm a conservative Republican. Oh, you can count on that. The lying rat wasn't in office 6 weeks and started doing everything he could to get the Forrest bust out of the state capitol, and Cracker Barrel and some of these other Yankee-owned businesses around Nashville, like Vanderbilt. Oh, and our communist kickball team, our professional soccer team, they all signed on to this request to have the Forrest bust removed from the state capitol. And not only did Cracker Barrel sign that, they published a thing talking about how terrible Forrest was, and he started the Ku Klux Klan, and he was anti-black and all of this nonsense like that. So we had about 1,000 of these flyers printed up to boycott Cracker Barrel. And we would give them to people that came on a tour of the Forrest Home and said, look, we're Southerners. We don't tell you where you can or can't eat. But if you have a choice, please don't go to Cracker Barrel, because this, and we gave them one of those flyers with the Cracker Barrel quote on there, this is what they think of General Forrest, and you're here at Forrest's home, and this is what they think of General Forrest. And we're getting ready to print another 1,000. We've given away our first 1,000. We're going to print up some more to give away. So I've heard Cracker Barrel went about $20 million or something in the hole. I don't know if the Forrest Home had anything to do with it, but I certainly hope we helped. And here's my crowning glory. Several years ago, the National Military Parks came to Franklin, and they were going to make these historic sites around Franklin part of a national military park, like they did at Shiloh or Chickamauga. Now, they couldn't do it all in one place, in one big park, because too much of it's private property. But they were going to make it a lot of little satellite parks under the National Parks Department and the National Military Parks. And they call me in as a representative of the Sam Davis Camp, which owns Winstead Hill, which is about 2 miles south of Franklin. And that was General Hood's observation post up on the side of that hill during the Battle of Franklin. And back then, it was all farmland between Winstead Hill and downtown Franklin, so you could see all the way into Franklin. So that the Sons of Confederate Veterans, the Sam Davis Camp, got that property back in the 1980s, and we put up monuments there and maintained the hill. We have 14 Confederate monuments on that hill to the 6 Confederate generals that were killed at Franklin. There's one for Adams, Carter, Gist, Strahl, Granberry, and then there's another big one up further up the hill to Major General Patrick Claiborne. And then there's state markers there from Alabama, Missouri, and all that list their troops at the Battle of Franklin. So I got called into this meeting, and they wanted to buy Winstead Hill to make it part of this national military park. I said, no way are we going to sell it. I said, I've been to the national parks, the military parks. It used to be Confederate and Union, and now it's all about slavery. And we're not turning over Winstead Hill to have a bunch of our markers torn down and
good
a bunch
you,
of slavery
Jay.
Monuments put up there. And when they heard that and they couldn't get Winstead Hill, they dropped the whole plan. And I think that was, if I did anything good for the Confederacy, that was probably it, to refuse to sell our property, the Sons of Confederate Veterans property, at Winstead Hill to this national military park, and make a big slavery display up there on our hill and trash all our monuments, or who knows, they would have taken them off down and dumped them down in the Harpeth River or something. So you have to stand up for your history. And money and people that hate you and despise your history, you have to make some kind of stand against them. And just writing a letter and telling them, I'm not giving anything to that commemorative Air Force because it used to be the Confederate Air Force. You thought it was great when you could make money off of our name, and now you fold it up. So hopefully our listeners will have some courage and stand up to the enemy on our soil.
Well, Gene, I'm going to ask our listeners to do something. We can't do it now. We're almost out of time. But if we will, we need to not drop the ball on this. Next week, I would like our listeners to call in, send us emails, Eddie at bloodriverradio.com, and request some of these flyers, make copies of them, and deliver them to the Cracker Barrel, and continue on what the Bitter Ender has done. I salute you for that, Bitter Ender. I would like you to send me one. and I will do likewise. God, thank you so much for coming on, Gene. And thank you so much, Blood River Radio family, for tuning in. Same time, same place next week, God willing. Good night, everybody.